Blog Talk Radio.
And here we go with the main event of the evening, ladies and gentlemen in attendance, Bucks and fans joining us around the world. It's time for the Matthew Ball that we've been waiting for. Finally, it's the end.
All right, that's already preloaded for the show. For my boxing show, and sometimes I forget. But you know what? It has that feeling of a big fight when we get down to the nitty gritty of the NBA Finals, which after last night, that's exactly where we're at. We're down to the nitty and the gritty. This is going to be fun. He's Marshall. I'm Chris. We're here to break this all the way down. Of course, stay with us all the way through the finals. More than likely, it won't necessarily always take a week for the next show. It kind of depends on what's going on. If we have a tight series, there's a good chance, because there is some separation in games, because they do stretch it out a fair amount anyway. We may have more than just once a week, especially if we're talking about a tied series. Or, you know, just good games or overtime games or whatever. But stay with us all the way through the NBA Finals, the post-show, and then stay with us for free agency as well, the NBA Draft. We're going to, you know, grind and get into all that, because obviously we do have, another interesting free agency, and it does have to do with an Oklahoma City player. And even guys that are a year away, people will be talking about no matter what. Obviously, we're going to get into the finals matchup, Golden State versus Cleveland, the rematch from last year. However, we wouldn't be doing our due diligence if we didn't recap not just last night, but we might as well go game six as well, just because it's still, to an extent, fresh in our memories. Really, game one, game six, and game seven, I thought were the most highly contested games all the way through. We were actually talking right before we got on live air here, and I was saying two, and Marshall corrected me, because game one was actually very, very close down to the wire. I had forgot about that. So I was making a comment to him saying, you know, I did enjoy the series as a fan. I really did. You know, there's a lot of talent on the floor. Similar styles, but also a clash of styles. So it was a fun series to watch. Obviously, you know, a great, great comeback to become the 10th team in history out of over 200 to come back from a 3-1 deficit. That is huge by Golden State. Even bigger, though, when it comes to the conference final, too, to just do that kind of, you know, in the first round, then get knocked off, or, you know, don't make it to the finals or even win the finals, which obviously Golden State is the favorite as of right now. But man, I think that makes it even bigger deal, the fact that it came, you know, in the Western Conference Finals. The first, and this one kind of threw me off too, and this is kind of my point that I was going to actually get to, Marshall, before we started talking about other stuff, is sometimes a six-game series features four games, two overtimes, a tit-for-tat type game. Sometimes a six-game series can be funner as far as game by game and more competitive. Of course, they're going to be competitive if you're going seven games, but you know what I'm saying, as far as throughout all the way to the end type games. And since 2002, I believe, the Lakers, this is the first time there was a game seven in the Western Conference Finals in quite some time. So that was a little stat where I go, oh, yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose. I guess I didn't think about that. Although you can kind of name maybe more competitive series on the court, game in and game out. But that was interesting. Also, a fun fact that I saw and Marshall reminded me of as well. He stated it as well that last night, you know, the Nielsen rating came out, which is about 2000-ish. It is the highest rated cable game. And maybe, just maybe, the next couple of years, or maybe when the contract's over, maybe we can get some of these game sixes and game sevens on ABC. not just the finals. That would be interesting too, because that will obviously add that little bump in appeal. But we are going to start the show with recap. We'd be, like I said, we wouldn't be doing our due diligence here if we didn't talk about the last two games. Not much to talk about on the other side of things, because Cleveland, you know, finished things out pretty handedly. And so not much to talk about as far as recap. Of course, we're going to talk about Cleveland, but just not really much for recap. That game was already last Friday, and it was a blowout. Kind of surprising. I thought Atlanta would put up a bigger fight than that at their home – or not Atlanta, Toronto at their home court. But let's get into Game 6 and Game 7, Marshall. And obviously, if this is your first time listening to the show, we have ourselves the Golden State fan. And I can attest that he is a true fan, because a lot of people are bandwagons the last couple of years. And, I mean, truth be told, it's kind of hard not to at least somewhat bandwagon or have a rooting interest. Plenty of people out there have a rooting interest when it comes to Golden State, their style of play. And obviously Steph Curry and the way he's, you know, transformed his game, and it just keeps going up and up and up. Obviously Thompson had a great – I mean – to me, Thompson was the MVP of the series. But let's get to Game 6, Marshall. Long intro. Let's get right to Game 6. Now, this was fun. This game was fun. I really enjoyed this game. It was nip and tuck, a good chunk of it, no doubt about it. It was just a fun game, right? But there was times the Warriors would get up by that, I'm not going to say, I mean, I guess no lead in this type of series where both teams can go off offensively, especially Golden State. You know, maybe a 10-point lead, 15-point lead with other teams is a mountain, whereas with these two teams it's not as big, but still, it means a lot to come back. And, you know, Oklahoma City kept getting a comfortable lead. Now, you know, it's not like Golden State wasn't in the game, clearly. They were all up inside the game, but there were some times that Oklahoma City, you know, was stretching that lead. And like I say, I hate to say comfortable, because nothing's comfortable in this series, and especially against the returning champs, Golden State. You know, you can never really put your foot, you know, take your foot off the throttle, and that's what happened. We had a little flashback here. If you look at the last 5 minutes, bunch of turnovers on Oklahoma City. Now, some of them obviously great defense, some of them definitely forced, but others were not forced. And you're just like, uh-oh. And if I look at the stat correctly, in the last 90 seconds, Marshall, Mr. Westbrook had four turnovers. Now, sure, one of them was a fall, big deal. But still, let's just say three in the last 90 seconds, and I think five or six. Yeah, I think it was four, and he had one all game. But the last 3 minutes, it was four, and he had three in the last 90 seconds. He also set a record, especially the last two games, but he set a record of turnovers in a Western Conference final, for a series anyway. So Golden State, although Oklahoma City at times kept stretching it a little bit and getting – a little bit of, you know, a gap, a space. That's what basketball is all about when you're trying to close out a game. You got, if you can get that nice little chunk, you got to make them pay for it and stretch it back to nine, so they got to grind it back down to three, and then you got to get it back to seven. Then they got to grind, you know. So I thought it looked like Oklahoma City, Marshall, was doing a pretty good damn job at that, because there's times where I'm like, uh-oh, yep, here comes Golden State. Yep, it's over. But then all of a sudden I'd see Oklahoma City jet back out, and all of a sudden you look and you go, huh, wow, they got a sizable lead. What the hell, you know? But if you look at that fourth quarter, 33-18, and especially the last give or take 3 minutes, Golden State just closed the door offensively and defensively and got it done, man. What was your you know, your feelings and your thought process going through that whole game? Because it looked pretty good for Oklahoma City in the last chunk of that game until, like I said, those last 3 minutes when they had a flashback of what that team was about this season. That's something we documented all playoffs long.
I wasn't able to see five, but I did hear that the defense was somewhat restored after a lackadaisical effort from a Golden State opinion in games 3 and 4. And
yeah, that's fair.
I noticed that there was some defense there. There was some grittiness. The idea of having Bogut protect the rim and having Draymond be the Draymond I know and cheered for, like, they were getting back to playing some better D. It also appeared to me that Oklahoma City was very conscious of not wanting to let us run. From when I watched a couple of games during the series, there appeared to be more contested offensive rebounds. Maybe some of that was poor shot-taking decisions by Oklahoma City, but there's a lot of times where Golden State was rebounding the ball, and I didn't have to fear Ibaka's arms or Steven Adams's, you know, arms going in there to swipe a ball. So I like the way we boxed it out. I thought the defense was better, and as Draymond Green said in the press conference after, he just said, we just didn't quit. We made sure, and I believe Steph said this too, that we made sure that we were staying within our arm's reach compared to games 3 and 4, where I remember being in Texas with my dad watching game 3. I'm like, God, I love my Warriors I love my Dubs, but we're down 25. This one's over. It maybe got to 12 or 13, but for the most part, Chris, as you mentioned in your intro, Oklahoma City led between like 6 and 10 the whole game. So close enough to where you're like, dude, if we hit a couple threes, we're right back in it. And not where the panic button was being pressed. But I wasn't feeling confident either. My one mindset was, okay, this team, it's a magical year. I'm a huge fan. I'm obviously looking at this from a biased perspective. I'm like, you know, we still got it. We're still hanging in there. We still got a chance. And we still got a man named Draymond, Steph, and Clay. Like, we still got these pieces. And if they can just go on a little run, and it just, okay, just keep staying. So the defense intensity was there. Oklahoma City wasn't quite as fluid. I mean, they weren't clicking quite like they were in game 3 and 4, but also I think that's because we countered it and we weren't going to get our butts kicked to finish our season. And an overall perspective I had that kind of, I thought, wrapped up game 6, Oklahoma City played incredible. You just happened to face one of the best shooters in NBA history, period. Steph and Clay, for as long as we're alive, it's going to be hard to find two people that can shoot the ball as well as they did. That game basically came down to the wire, and Clay Thompson set an all-time playoff record with 11 threes. So if you're an Oklahoma City fan after that game, Billy Donovan did mention how it turned into isolation ball, which was like the Oklahoma City kryptonite. Durant had some struggling plays. Iguodala played phenomenal defense as well. Westbrook,
they couldn't find a
terrible
three either. They could not three. Three for 23.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Golden State, you know, Clay Thompson had 11 on his own. So their offense did struggle. There was some hiccups, just like when Golden State played Oklahoma City in the regular season. Golden State was down almost every game, but it was fourth quarter, little niches. Ah, crap, here we go again for OKC. And that flashed back again. And obviously, you got to Iguodala and Clay. The defense was phenomenal. I know Westbrook giggled in a press conference, kind of taking a little bit of a shot at Curry for playing D. And Curry's not a lockdown defender, but there's no little giggles or shots at Clay and Iggy because those boys D'd up. But honestly, game 6, they showed the heart. They didn't get down enough. But you had one of the best shooters ever put on. Well, Marv Albert, who has been doing games since you and I have long been alive, said it was one of the best team performances he ever saw. So we won the game, but now that I've had time to regroup and think about it, we won the game because we had one of the best performances ever. Like, it's not like Oklahoma City really choked. You know, those
besides from the three-point line, they made them shoot. They shot 40%. State. So you're right. You're right there. They play. Besides the last 3 minutes of the game, I didn't call that a choke either.
No, you know, and it is also fair though to say that Durant needs to do better, because a couple years ago, that would have been LeBron, we would have said, dude, LeBron had four turnovers down the stretch, so you need to do your thing. So there's some superstar power that says, okay, Durant and Westbrook could have done a little bit more. But again, that game shouldn't have been close, because Klay Thompson was just, I mean, there were three times where Marv Albert announcer said he literally caught the ball and was shooting it and hadn't even made eye contact with the hoop, or his body was turning in motion as he caught it. That one from the top.
Plus, he doesn't have to step into it either. He has this weird shot. It's different than Curry. He doesn't need to step into his shot.
The one from the top of the key was 30 feet, and they entered. Again, I was so excited after watching that game. I watched like an hour and a half of postgame stuff, and I have two TVs in my living room. I'm a single bachelor sports fan.
You weren't going to miss a thing.
No. So I had the Golden State regular FSN channel and the TNT with Charles and all those goofballs. So they asked Kerr, they're like, Kerr, you know, what do you think? What were you thinking when Clay let that one go from the top of the key? And he was thinking, oh, my God. And then it went in. He was like, dear Lord, you know. So he gives him a little bit of a leash. But even Kerr was like, yeah, I that was pretty far. So, I mean, incredible game. That's one of the most enjoyable games I've seen in a long time. I even heard that from, like, friends of mine who weren't necessarily Golden State fans, of like, man, game six was awesome, and all the adrenaline. And when Klay Thompson hit that transition three with a minute to go to put him up three, that kind of felt like a little bit of a nail. Not a dagger, but it's like, dude, you can see the look on the face and, oh, dude, how many threes can this guy hit? So that was tremendous. And after that game, you know, there was a mindset of, okay, I was super happy, but then I had to kind of, the next day I'm like, we won, but also we didn't win the series. It felt like a series win because it was a must win and everyone was going nuts, but also it's like, okay, we come back home, but you don't want to lose too much focus. And that's a point that I thought Draymond mentioned very well to kind of wrap up my thoughts on game six of, he said, okay, we won this game, but game seven is going to be tougher because they're going to come with what they got. We got our home court, fans, but we don't want to get too cocky, because what we did was awesome tonight, but it's going to feel even dumber if they slipped up. Now, of course they didn't, Chris, but yeah, man, game six, that's a game I won't forget for a long time. And seeing Klay shoot the ball like he did, that's just something that's hard to see. It's spectacular. As you said, sometimes he's turning, it's like video game stuff. You're not supposed to go into a gym and turn like sideways and like shoot a ball off a catch and release in like a second and swish it. I think they said, like, of his 11 threes, 9 were swishes. Like, I know that's something kind of picky, but still, you're swishing them. Like,
no,
if you and I go to a gym, if I make a three, you might hit a rim. Like, you're swishing them. Like, dear Lord, that was so awesome. Did you have any closing thoughts on game six there, Chris?
Yeah, I mean,
I know we touched that pretty well. Go ahead.
Well, I think that, and I think you mistakenly said Durant with all the turnovers at the end, because it actually was Westbrook at the end, as far as the last three minutes. But overall,
well,
there's still
a couple of shots. They just didn't go
I was going to say, overall, the respect, you're right, though, in your thought, because you were saying that he has to be responsible for his shooting percentage. I mean, let's be honest. There was a couple of times, maybe not in the last game, but even in the games that they were winning, there was a couple times in the last two series, not just – actually, the playoffs in general, I would say, on average, of course, we can look at a 41-point game and all that, but in like last night, sure, it was like 11-19. He shot just fine. But his shot from the three was for him, was off. You know, maybe people would, you know, there's a lot of people that would take that, you know, his percentage. But overall, I know a couple on my home squad that would take the percentage he shot. But I'll tell you what, he does have to own up for that part. Because good shot, bad shot, if it's a tough shot, then that means don't take it and pass the ball to somebody. But, yeah, we saw a minor flashback in the last couple minutes. And I don't care what anybody says about one of them that they saw on a replay that was a fault, because we could go all day long on that.
Yeah.
And we've had that conversation a bunch of times where maybe in the last 2 minutes, if they're in there, they should check on something. And we both said, you know, if it's only a little bit of time, okay, but we can't get in that habit of going and checking stuff and making sure things are,
no.
you know, ball. You can't get too lost in that. That's for damn sure. But you did see Westbrook put his head down and just try to will himself to the rim, which when it's not there, you don't do it. And that's what he did in game six. Once, you know, once game six, it was funny because I was going to text you, but I just didn't want to. I still had one more game, so I didn't want to even bring anything involved with anything. You know what I mean? It's like one more game.
Sure.
I'm not going to text you anything. I'm not going to do nothing. But it was interesting how once they got those two games, especially I feel game six, because of what you said, that they really had a sizable lead, a good chunk of that game. And I just thought, this thing's over. As much as, you know, if it was the Timberwolves, or if I was, you know, Golden State was my squad, you wouldn't hear that coming out of my mouth. But since I didn't have a look at it like that, I had no personal look at it. I was like, oh, this is a wrap,
yeah.
dude, especially the way they closed that game out and hung around the whole time. And also, Iguodala, he was key. The last three games, the defense he showed, and that's we called out, we put a little noise towards Durant. We also have to say Iguodala did a great job on him because he made it a lot tougher. And also, Marshall, not that he went off for 28 points or anything, but he started hitting those key corner threes that he can hit. Sometimes he'll
mm-hmm.
fake it and go to the back.
Yeah.
But other time, you know, he started landing that. And when that happens, now you got yourself an MVP-type player in this system. And I say that because obviously that's what happened last year. You know, that guy was such a key. So when you look at that, and I felt like in the game seven anyway, we'll kind of push ourselves into that anyway as we, you know, are wrapping this up here. And even if you look at it, to me it felt like Klay was going to just be on fire, right? And Iguodala
yeah.
was going to lock and load. And then, okay, we got a lead. Okay, Curry, you take it over from here. Because to me that's what happened last night. The defense was there. Iguodala was really there. Not just on Durant, too. I saw him on Westbrook a couple of times, too. And sometimes these matchups,
mm-hmm.
this type of series, there's so many fast breaks. The matchups, you know, they kind of count but don't count at times because, you know, there's so much fast break. It's hard to identify people coming down. You're just trying to guard someone. You're not really worried about exactly who you are on sometimes. But to me, Klay was like just really – really doing his thing. And if you recall last year, he actually was just all right for most of it. Sometimes he'd pump up, but other times you go, huh, yeah, I don't know if Klay's all the way up to where he probably should be at times last year in the playoffs. But man, I remember us having conversations, a couple of games where he just wasn't shooting properly, like for his, not his technique. I'm saying him.
Sure.
There were some times where he struggled a little bit and wasn't owning up to how damn good he is. And in this series, I thought he was the MVP in this series. Clearly, I didn't even think it was a debate. But my point overall was, it was like Iggy, you get him. I'll score Curry. Take us home, buddy. Because last night Curry took him home in the last seven minutes. Oh, you're getting a little closer? Okay, take this. Now it's a 9-point game. Oh, you're starting to chop down the tree? Take that. Here's a layup. Oh, here's a three. The game's done. Every time, I think they got it to like 4 or 3 one last time, and what do you know? You know, Curry just said, take this with you. You know, and for me, that's how the game went. It was all kind of and that shows you how good of glue they are right now, and just in general these last couple of years, really. The glue of knowing, okay, this is my job, you do your job, I'm going to do my job. If we all do our jobs, we're good to go. And I kind of felt like a couple of, you know, for me, Draymond only had a couple of good games. The numbers this series, they're not going to jump out at you, but a couple of them, like you mentioned, key blocks at an exact time. He started really getting those rebounds, those hard rebounds, and fighting for them and boxing out. I thought he did a great job at that. Overall, I would say just an average series for Draymond, but Iguodala stepped up, Thompson stepped up, and like I said, Curry to me just kicked him down the street like, oh, you're coming up? All right, take this. You know, like basically king of the hill. And they were trying to come up. He's just like, no, take this with you.
Yeah, he had that little shimmy going too where he'll do that little back step, side step, bust the three deal thing. And it's just beautiful to watch. Now, if he's doing that on your team, it's not so beautiful at all. Probably makes you want to break your damn table while you're watching the game. I did say at the start of Game 7 that I was having a couple beers with my buddy, obviously emotional, praying for my team to win. Oklahoma City, I thought they were going to come out flat, and they didn't. They basically led the entire first two – they led the whole first half. And it was back to the issues we'd have of not spreading the ball and passing well enough. And Oklahoma City's defense was phenomenal. I remember turning to my friend I was watching the game with like, 4 or 5 minutes left in the first half, and I'm like, dude, we got like 29, 30 points. Like, what the hell is going on here? And I know we've talked a lot about Golden State, and rightfully so, we mentioned Durant and Westbrook, but a name that I need to mention, who I've become more and more of a fan of, is the phenomenal games that Steven Adams had. My God. You know, the team's going to kind of ride and die with Westbrook and Durant because coming down the stretch, they maybe don't choose to pass the ball all the time. And maybe that bit them in the butt a little bit down the stretch going into isolation ball or hero ball, as Barkley called it after that game six. But, man, the series Steven Adams had was just phenomenal. Who knows how the team's going to turn out, but whoever has him on that team, if he stays in Oklahoma City, I mean, the defensive intensity was phenomenal. His rebounding was great. He clearly is a pretty mature person because Draymond did about all he could. Yeah, and Draymond did about all he could to get in his head, and you never once saw Adam snap on him. I mean, clearly, I don't think Draymond's trying to hurt him or really, like, put his life in danger, but, you know, Draymond's going to play a little dirty, and Adams never once really fought back. He kept his head and his cool, which can't be said for all people. If that's Draymond and Blake Griffin, you can guarantee they're both going to be getting teed up the whole series. Adams kept
if
cool.
Anything, he was taking Draymond Green out of his game at times, you know?
Yeah, because Draymond's probably thinking, dude, why is this guy not getting rattled? Like, what the hell? And then the unfortunate little camera shots of Steven Adams, and I'll say this, for a big, he moves his feet very well. I'm not saying he's Anthony Davis or anything crazy, but for a center, he plays about as good as defense as you can ask for a guy his size. And there were about 5 or 6 threes last night where he came out on Clay or Steph, and it was literally a fingertip of within distance of that ball being blocked, deflected, or going in. And poor Adams, it was the way they were switching on picks, and as you said, transitions defense, which can just kind of lead to anything. Because if Clay and Steph want to shoot when the shot clock says 17, someone's got to put up a hand. But to give props to Adams, incredible, phenomenal series. And you can't even blame him for coming down the stretch because he never really had a ball in his hands. But, man, he did all he literally could. I just wanted to throw that note in.
This season. He definitely came of age this season. No doubt about it.
Incredible. But for Game 7, we weren't clicking in the first half. It was kind of, crap, here we go. We're not scoring, and Oklahoma City's length of Ibaka and Durant and Adams was causing a problem. And then come third quarter, it's like, oh, yeah, we're a team that loves to play at home, and we love to bust threes. And it was just beautiful. That stretch of when Draymond
that
hit
third
one,
quarter,
Steph
dude.
Hit one. Yeah.
That third
and
quarter,
Iggy
if you look at the
one,
score of that, whew, they just freaking cleaned their house in that third quarter, dude.
Yeah, and Varejao came off the bench and gave you a draw charge on Westbrook, a nice assist, and a layup. All within a couple of minutes. I mean, there were NBA people I was listening to that didn't even think he should play in the series because it's like, dude, Varejao, like, what's he really doing? He comes off the bench and him and Barbosa go on a little run, like, the third quarter is like, oh, yeah, we're the Dubs. This is our home court. This is our game seven. Let's come out and play. And they hit those threes, and, you know, you had the Westbrook and Durant forcing shots. Sometimes Westbrook does it on purpose. Sometimes it's kind of how he plays, but there were shots being chucked left and right, and they weren't looking pretty. And that just feeds in Golden State. I just remember one specifically about middle third quarter. Westbrook ran around a pick, chucked up an awkward three, didn't even touch the net, and within 5 seconds, Golden State's running down. And I can't remember if that was a Livingston dunk or a Draymond three, but
it was probably more like 2 seconds, dude. I think five was like a long time for them. It must have been like 2.5 seconds, dude.
And that's the thing. It's like it's a cliche, but you really can't take dumb shots against the team, especially at home, because you're a simple breakout pass away from Clay or Steph busting a three, and that play's going absolutely nuts. And as you mentioned, the fourth quarter, they did make a little bit of a push. I know they got it down to like 4 points, but then Ibaka kind of had a mind cramp foul on Curry when you shot that three, and that put it back up to
big.
7.
Yep, good call on that.
You know,
I do remember that. That was dumb, yep.
That was huge. I mean, I'm not saying we're going to be talking about a different team winning, but that was kind of that final gut punch of, oh, damn, we had down to 4. And now, oh, crap, we just gave Curry 3 free throws, and you knew he wasn't missing one of those. But just a great run. And to Oklahoma City's credit, the Dubs really didn't go on many great runs. We gave Clay a lot of props. That game six with Clay keeping the Warriors folding himself. Game seven was that one time where, you know, you had Westbrook and Durant rush. They weren't passing the ball as well. And that goes to show, too, Chris, because if you look at the box score, I believe if you combine the numbers of Andre Robertson I apologize, but the bench players, basically everyone named not Westbrook and Durant, had off nights. And this will be kind of my point I'll throw it back to you, but if you look at Game 7 and Game 6, Durant and Westbrook carried the load. But the reasons I think people were loving this team in Games 3 and 4 especially was because everyone was touching the ball. Andre Robertson last night was like 2 of 9. Deion Waiters didn't exist. You know, Ibaka and Adams.
Yeah, well, he had a poor game. Yep.
The team chemistry of what ties in to go up in the series kind of dissipated. And so you have a two-man ball show against the Warriors, who when they get hot, that crowd hit threes in the third quarter. That was just a makeup for disaster. And that got them to the win. They didn't have any choke jobs in the fourth quarter. They got a little bit close when he got down to 4 and Durant was scoring 7 points in a row. I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Run. It looked like the game was on ice at that point. You're right. All of a sudden, he did hit those straight points, and they got the 4, I think you're right, 3 or 4. But then, you know, Curry just kicked him down the road again, you know.
They finally hit that. They had that vaunted Dubs run where they hit their threes, got Barbosa and Varejao helping out. Like, dude, you know, how many different punches can you take? You do your best to watch Clay and Iguodala, who doesn't seem to miss a corner three when needed ever. He's got that very high arcing rainbow three.
Yeah.
That was just that final punch. But, from the OKC perspective, to not mention Westbrook and Durant, Adams had a phenomenal game. Ibaka kind of reemerged.
He did.
Let me ask
he
you
had
this
a good
question,
series.
Chris. This is kind of an overall fun question. We don't need to go too deep. But this is about Oklahoma City. You have pieces. But the I would say next factor, if you and I were Oklahoma City fans, would you want a guy like Andre Robertson on your team who is incredibly gifted defensively and offense is an issue? Because when we were having this chat, when we were watching this game with my friend last night, I was like, you know, if Andre Robertson can score, that might be the piece they need. You know, is it weird nowadays to have essentially a stopper in NBA that can't really score? Because, man, when he shot the ball last night, 2 of 9, 0 from 4 from 3, that was kind of a knock on him throughout the series. Is it weird to have a defensive stopper when you're this far in the playoffs that you're like, dude, go and do your best on D, but it's hard to rely on you in offense? That's a weird intangible that not every team has in the NBA. What's kind of your overall thought on that and how you view it as a fan yourself?
You know, I kind of disagree with that because it's not that I disagree. It's about how your team's built. And if you have the
True.
Leading scorer this year in the league, because that was Durant, right? Durant led the. So you have the leader, and then Westbrook can't be far behind, right?
No,
I'd assume. No. You know, and he takes more shots than the guy who scores. So if the guy leading the whole freaking league in scoring is not shooting as much as your teammate, you know, to me, I think he actually is something that we have to look at. And because throughout the series, I beg to differ on the missing shots and all that. Throughout the series, I thought he actually
he did good up until 6 and 7.
Randomly. Sure.
Yeah.
But you could also look back and say, well, Curry struggled in Game 3 and 4, and you know what I mean? So it's 7
True.
Straight games. So, you know, he's going to struggle. To me, I actually think that type of guy is a great piece because you have to have guys that aren't going to need the bucket. They're not going to need the rock. You know what I mean? I mean, what does Bogut do offensively that great? Four Golden State. You know what I mean? Four Golden State. I'm not saying
he's a great passer.
Right. If they gave
That's
18.
His specialty.
Right. But if they gave him 18 shots a game, of course, a lot of guys in the NBA, if you give them 18, 19 shots, they're going to score. But will it be empty? Will it be real? You know, there's a lot of ways to look at it. And for me, I think they need that glue. I think they need a defensive glue. What's been their biggest thing? Defense, right? They can score with you if we're talking about on average, not game to game, not game in and game out because it's going to fluctuate and all that. But and that's what I thought the defense for Golden State last night was, maybe not right away, because you're right. It was, I remember at 33-23 going, wow, this is Oklahoma City pace. They can play this game.
Mm-hmm.
And as of right now, Golden State has problems at that pace, usually, or at least it's going to be a tight game. That's for sure. And to me, I think you need glue guys that will develop in that role too, because I do remember, and I'm not trying to put pressure on this guy, but what the hell did Bruce Bowen do? Hit a three every once in a while, super late in his career. He couldn't hit a shot in the first like 8 years. He did finally get that three at some time. I mean, a little bit. It wasn't hoary, but it wasn't just horrendous either. So I think a guy like that could work on one or two spots on the floor that he could become better at that spot. So they know, okay, that's his spot, and they're not going to guard you out there anyway, or at least send a bunch of guys to you if the ball does in fact go to that corner or wherever he picks his spot. But no, to me, I think if you look at OK City all year, they fluctuated so many lineups, and I think they found that perfect balance of a lineup, to be honest. I'm not saying perfect, but for them, considering what they've had in the past and now, to me it's kind of a blend of nowadays ball, but also you got to have brute force in there. I didn't think Perkins – I thought Perkins looked real good in the starting lineup at the Celtics. But the second you get him out of that, he was not anywhere near the same player. At least Rondo still leads the league in assists and stuff like that. At least he may not look as good either. He's not getting triple doubles as much or scoring as much because people are actually going, hey, we got to keep an eye on this guy, whereas before they had so many scorers on that team. You know what I mean? So – I think that they found something in this guy, and he's a glue guy, and you can always put him to the bench. So I don't see that as a weakness just because you have two top five type scorers on your team.
Well, I I'll say this, and we can move on because this isn't clearly an OKC show. But from a perspective of a Golden State fan that does want to get cocky and acknowledge it, if you're an Oklahoma City fan, like, you just gave the best effort you could have, and you still came up short. Maybe Andre Robertson's a piece for you're not changing Westbrook Grant, and I'm sure I'm assuming they try to keep him. But it would be very frustrating as a fan to think, God, Oklahoma City, we did just all we could. We played about as good as we humanly possibly could, and we still lost. Who are things we're going to look at as soon as Grant comes back? Well, maybe Robertson's a guy that could be an X factor. I guess I'm just looking from a frustrated fan standpoint of, well, Robertson, maybe he's a person who's an option that can change because you're clearly not budging with your superstars.
Right, but let's flash back, Marshall. If you're a fan, you have a heart. You have an open area where you're going to show something, and you could actually make an argument that they overachieved this year.
Who thought Oklahoma City?
I mean, I know your answer, but who in the hell out there thought Oklahoma City was going to beat the Spurs? You know what I mean? Who didn't think at the beginning of the year that it'd be Golden State and the Spurs in the final? I mean, I would have put, if someone was drunk at the bar and started cocking off at the mouth and started putting up some money, I probably, my dumb ass, it would have been my dumb ass, right? Because I would have lost the money in this particular case. So, you know, honestly, there is that, okay, let's calm down. The guy we just talked all this great stuff about is, I believe, like 25 or 23. So there might be still something to grow on the center position. Ibaka and Kanter, Ibaka's still here, but he doesn't have to be dependent upon so much because of the other two bigs. I don't know. I mean, to be honest with you, I wouldn't say – I don't know. I think they overachieved this year, and I think they found something. And when you find something, then you can plug in a piece or two or get a vet that will come off and be instant offense and match up exactly how you want it. So to me – I kind of feel like they overachieved. So if I once the, you know, it's hard to say that the next day as a fan because you're pissed, especially when you're up 3-1, and that's still in the back of your head. And you know, so you obviously followed Oklahoma City years back when they're on the up and up a lot more. But you know, the one thing I'll say, there's so many times that Durant gives that look at Westbrook, like, dude. Seriously? Like, what are you doing, dude? And for how much this guy has improved? And when we say, well, they're about as good as – well, I don't know about that, Marshall, because what I saw with – when Durant went down last year, Westbrook became a different player. A 100% – well, I shouldn't say 100%, but you know what I mean? He really did. We didn't see triple-doubles out of the guy is what I'm trying to say. You never really saw too many triple-doubles out of the guy and spreading the ball and sometimes get 17 points and 17 assists. That's something you would have never seen in his first handful of years. So, to me, I think that this is a learning situation because he did have 4 turnovers in the last 3 minutes, and 3 of them came with the last 90 seconds. You were right there. Could you have played a tad bit better in those last 3 games? Definitely. But then again, you know, you played great in the other game, so you take the good with the bad, and it all evens out. And obviously, it evened out for Golden State to get by him. But honestly, I if I were Durant, this is what I'd do. I would sign a 2-year deal and then see what they do with Westbrook because his deal's coming up here soon too. Obviously, you get more money with that new influx of money from the extra billion that they got coming in. But I honestly think that they should keep it together. I really, really do because I think they finally got something, and there's some young parts and pieces, and all it takes is one vet off the bench to just add something, and it's just a nice little mix. Maybe it's a guy, I'm not going to say Iguodala, but maybe it's a guy that at one time was a guy that a franchise looked at and said, similar to Iguodala, because that's what he was in Philadelphia. He made an all-star game. But they realized, maybe he's not a total, complete one option. You know, maybe not. At times he is, at times he's not. It's similar to a Ron Harper. Ron Harper was an all-star caliber player. He went to the Bulls, took a secondary role, but he was a stud. You know what I mean? And everybody knew it. But it was just like he found his role. So I wouldn't blow up anything if I were them. But I will say, man, next year will be his 10th year, you know, and to be looking at Russ this late in their career, or not late, but this far into their careers, to give that look to Westbrook, maybe he can't handle that. You know, maybe he goes to the Spurs. I could see him going to the Spurs. You know, they'd have their big three then. Other than that, where else can he go in the next couple of years that's going to be better? Cleveland? You know, if they got rid of Love, okay. But where else is he going to go? Golden State? If they didn't, you know, if Barnes, you know, was able to, you just swap him in, okay, sure, that's a possibility. But other than those two teams, what's going to be a better thing in the next 3 to 5 years? Or 3 teams, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because Golden State, San Antonio, and Cleveland, you know, well, what's going to be a better situation? Not many. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah, that's just one of those fun questions to have. That reminds me of our days back at Brown where you ask a sport take. A guy named Mike Peters isn't yelling at us, so we can try to break it down.
He still owes me money on that Lakers-Celtics frickin' series.
we need to track him down one day, have him buy us a couple of beers.
He's pissed off right now because the oil market's all messed up, I'm sure. Too bad. Yeah, exactly.
we'll see. Obviously, I just saw when we started doing our show, Broussard said that Durant's going to think about it. We'll open up my options. But just some fun questions because, from Oklahoma City's standpoint, whether you thought that you gave your best shot or, as you mentioned, the counterpoint me, that was a hell of a good one. They can get even better. Lots of promise from going up there. Clearly, the Warriors, though, the grittiness showed. You do got that calm, yet very swaggy composure of Steph in that post game of Game 7. Like, you know, it's crazy how popular he's becoming. I'm starting to notice, like, even people, like, in random, whether I'm at work or grocery store or social media, he's starting to become that popular guy that people don't even, like, they may not know what team he plays for, but Steph Curry's starting to become that cool guy that just his name is spreading, like wildfire. And kids obviously love him. Insane, too, as the jerseys and the personality of Steph. And he's got that calm demeanor of him and that stood out in the press conference. And I'm sure if you're not a Golden State fan, you view it as that kind of quiet, like, stone-killed cockiness. But, man, he was fun to watch. And I didn't see Draymond's press conference last night, but the Warriors are moving on. And
Draymond better be calm down a little bit, though, with that suspension lingering.
One more
call, and if it holds on the books, he's out for a game.
That is something that I would not want to see. Chris, I think we did a great job of offering Oklahoma City's perspective as they move on. Game 7, well, as you said, Steph said, we ain't losing, boys, and he pumped his chest. Is there anything else you want to offer to wrap up? Well, I guess one note I should make, I'm talking poorly here, but Billy Donovan, like, for a first-year coach, we talked about the team overachieving. Great job, too. He was able to find some type of theory that worked with Robertson. Maybe Robertson had a tough game last night, but you put a random role player in that's not a great shooter in Oracle Arena Game 7, you know, the pressure's tight. Adams.
Hey, he did a great job on Curry for a lot of the series. He did a hell of a job on Curry for a chunk of the series. So that's good enough to be in the lineup for my mind, you know.
True. Any final points before we move on to the next level?
I mean, unless we're going to stretch it out 5 years and we're going to talk about my Timberwolves, no, I'm good.
Yeah, the big cat, man. As long as we keep doing our show, Chris, God willing, everything goes well. We're going to mention that guy's name in the playoffs. I don't know about the finals, but things are looking up. And Karl Anthony Towns is a hell of a guy, and I hope one day we do talk about him.
Know about the finals. When you have two top 10 players, you're going to get to the finals once.
True. So now we got the rematch. And honestly, if you were to ask me who I wanted to play or what I want, I want Cleveland again. Because as you mentioned, there are people.
Oh, you didn't want the Knicks? You didn't want the Knicks in the East? Like, come on, dog. Of course you. Well, who else was going to come out? Who else was going to come out? There's nobody. I mean, I'm not trying to hack Toronto, but
yeah.
I'm just saying. It was written.
You know, if Atlanta would have came in the finals, that could have been maybe the biggest winning margin of finals NBA history. but we got a rematch. And there's so many great things to talk about, but there's also that one little note that you've mentioned and I've heard from different players and coaches of, Cleveland wasn't quite the same last year because they had people hurt. Okay? Fair, however you want to take that point on.
Well, hold on. When you say however you want to take it, there's fact. There's things that happen on the court martial, which is fact.
That's true.
And then there's opinion. I try to base stuff on
facts. That's a nice way to put that. You're right.
And the fact is, there was a couple of things that anybody on the planet could have pointed out in those first three games.
True.
That's just a fact.
That's true. that is a fact. That you're right. The fact is that Kevin Love and Kyrie Nelson, just tarnishing the Duke legacy. That Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving were hurt last year.
That the legacy in the pros.
Kyrie Nelson, he's going to be hot this year in the finals. Kyrie Nelson.
If
that
they
Kyrie
had
Irving
Nelson
Kevin,
last year, dude, oh my God, Nelson and LeBron, it's over.
I heard the Wolves actually want to make a trade for Kyrie Nelson this offseason.
I bet you shoots better than Rubio from outside.
Yeah,
I don't even know who this
true.
Interesting guy is, but I'll take him.
So the fact, and you say this very nicely, the fact is that Kyrie and Kevin Love didn't play in the finals last year. I should say the opinion that bites me, that excites me for this final, is that people said that, I don't know if the Dubs would have won a title. And you didn't say this first. You handled this in a mature way, but I heard many people chirp, NBA players, coaches, or fans of, well, I don't know if you guys would have won it. And it kind of tarnished our title. I think that's BS. But now, hey, we're on it. God willing, I hope everyone stays healthy. We got a finals where everyone's included. And I believe in Steph, who maybe had a little bit of a shakiness last night. That was Steph. I think he's good to go, barring something we don't know. So we got
ever
a rematch.
Since he dropped 41, he's good to go.
We got everyone involved. So game on. I guess it's time to set up the just basic standpoints of it. Golden State does have home court advantage in case you did miss a 73-9 season. Home court is warranted today because they had arguably the best regular season in history. So this one ain't starting in Cleveland. I know some NBA analysts were kind of joking about if Oklahoma City was to go to the finals, like there's apparently like a haunted hotel, like the Oklahoma City downtown, like where the like their super nicest hotel.
Yeah,
is haunted.
I've heard of it. I've seen a little special on that.
Like Wes Johnson's bathtub filled up with water once, and he wasn't in the room, and he came back and his bathtub was full, and he ran the hell out of there, freaked out. And I can't do my bathtub randomly filled up, but no hauntedness. We're going to the Bay. Game one is Thursday. The Warriors are a 5.5-point favorite, and they're about -220 to win the series. So Vegas thinks they're like a 2-1 favorite. So look at that from a perspective. If you bet to win $100, you have to bet $220 to profit $100. So they're a decent favorite, not overwhelming, but people think, hey, the Warriors had a great year. They beat them last year. We're going to make them the favorite. I don't think that's crazy. Maybe if you're a Cleveland fan, you could say it would be a little bit closer, but okay. So we're set up. Clearly, the coaches are different this year. We have Tyronn Lue coaching the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was a part of the team last year, but he was not their head coach. David Blau is head coach. We just signed with a Turkish team yesterday. But Tyronn Lue is the head coach, and he's going up against Kerr. Clearly, that will be something we'll talk about, but that's a huge factor. But I guess last year we went kind of offense, defense. I'll start off from an offensive perspective of Golden State. The boys are clicking. What Steph and Clay have been doing lately, it's super hard to defend. It does really matter who the hell you are. It's going to be super hard to slow down Clay and Steph. And Bogut, when on the court, has been able to find his niche at home. Iguodala and Barnes are going to be an interchangeable piece. If you remember last year in the finals, those two did some maneuvering around. Barnes was kind of starting, then Iguodala came in because he was such a great presence on LeBron. So we could go in depth, but really, I don't.
Well, they brought Iguodala in the starting lineup when they're down 2-1.
Yeah, they brought him in and subbed out.
Brought him in game 7, didn't they? Not to interrupt you. Didn't they bring him in game 7? Iguodala started game 7?
He actually started game 7. Yeah, he did. He did. So that's kind of just their. Because, God, he's just so damn good on defense. He enjoys that six-man role, and he's been very good at it. But when you need a stopper, and I think that kind of overshadows a little bit of what Klay does, because Klay Thompson is also one of the best two guards at defense for NBA. But Iguodala, I got to give him over Klay because he's got more muscle. I don't know if Klay could do what Iguodala does to LeBron just because Klay isn't big enough. But for his position, he definitely carries his own weight.
But if Iguodala had to score 20 points, he may start to wear down too. So you got to put that in for Clay, you know what I mean?
He is exerting a lot of energy,
you know?
Absolutely. So I guess offensively, Clay and Steph are going to get theirs. Clearly the defensive matchup facing him is a little bit different this series. I guess from a Golden State fan perspective, I just hope that when Kerr brings in the backups, that's just where you're going to get a little dicey. And our bench isn't bad. You're going to see Sean Livingston come in, who's been a very nice backup point guard this year. Then you're going to probably see Mo Spates, who shoots the ball, I would say, as much as Russell Westbrook does when available. Mo Spates doesn't ever see a red light, Chris. It is green light no matter where he is on the court within about 10 feet of half court and in. Mo Spates loves to chuck. So this is a factor that probably needs to be too concerned about, because Golden State's probably going to find a way to score, whether it be a slower pace or a quicker pace. But to have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson playing really hot right now, Curry using that bench when needed, obviously I hope Azili can kind of shake out the cobwebs. He was a little dicey. He had a couple of games in Oklahoma City where he made a stupid foul after coming in and sat right back down. Because maybe Azili will be needed, because maybe teams will do hack to Bogut. Oklahoma City did hack to Bogut a couple of times, and Bogut's free throw shooting, despite being a great defender and great passer, is pretty garbage. He's around 40%. So
They did it to Azili, too.
He's slightly better. Yeah.
But they did it to him. That's when they started doing it to
him.
That's when they brought that in.
And I think he's like closer to 60-ish, so he's not great, but he's slightly better than Bogut. So, that's my summary. Klay Thompson and Steph are going to do their thing, and you're going to have a nice mixture of the bench of Harrison and Iggy, Tivity, if you're looking from a positive standpoint. You'll need times where Livingston and Mo Spades come in and contribute, because you got to rest Klay and Steph. Well, there's one thing Kerr doesn't really believe in, at least I've noticed, is he'll never have one of his guys play 45, 46 minutes. Like you mentioned, LeBron played 46 minutes in Game 3 versus Toronto in the Eastern Conference Finals. He played the final 24 minutes of the second half. In my 3 years of watching this team play, Chris, and I've watched them, you know, as much as I can, I don't recall many times Steph ever played. So there is going to be times in this series where Steph and Klay are going to be on the bench, possibly at the same time. So Livingston and Azili and Mo Spates are going to be guys I'm going to turn to, and I guess you can call Harrison Barnes a backup. I guess it depends on the Dudeggy. But offensively, I'm feeling pretty good. But like you said, it's hard to slow down Klay and Steph, but the bench will be kind of a factor as well, obviously. Sorry, I got kind of winded there. I was ran out a little bit too much because, you know, Steph and Klay got their part. Got to hope everyone kind of helps them out with the Calvary.
Right. Yeah, and obviously Cleveland had plenty of issues. You know, they started the season without Kyrie. It took them a good, what, two and a half months? Something like that. It took them a while to get back.
Right, yeah, two months for sure. I want to say, right, 2 months at least.
And then, you know, when you get back with something like that, you need to get back. You know, you need to get all the way back. That type of thing, the kneecap and any kind of stuff like that, it takes a little while. So it actually took him quite a while, I thought, to get in the groove. I do feel like, although I wouldn't – he's a player that I would keep an eye on as far as injury, if you look at his history. Hopefully a young player like that can get a couple years in a row and get by some of this injury in the first, you know, in college and in the first couple of years of his career, you know. So hopefully for the NBA anyway sake, that a guy like that, you know, he's a good young player. I know he's a Dookie, but he is a potential stud in the future, no doubt about it. I mean, he has stud, you know, there's times where he's a stud right now. But he's still, you know, he's still developing as a player, and some of it is, let's be honest, he has had some injury bug, and it's really the injury flu, because they're not little minor, oh, I'm out for three games. No, it's like, yeah, you're hurt, dude, you're done. You know what I mean? It's some serious injuries. Like I said, even in his first game, or his first, you know, his first and only season at Duke, you know what I mean? So
he
didn't get
to see him. I think he played seven games.
Yeah, it's super late in the season.
Five,
you know what I mean?
Five or six games, and he played one in the tournament, maybe one for like a couple of minutes. So yeah, you're right. He keeps getting his knees too. I don't think
they're major
injury, Chris, but they're big. Yeah, you're right. It's not ticky tack, kind of like Steph with his ankles. He rarely played. It was kind of an oh man, I hope that's rolled again. But you're right. Kyrie's had like boom torn ACL or busted ankle or something huge.
And your legs in the NBA, you know, you can't be messing with those. You can't be, you can only take it, you know, you only keep your youthful body for so long. Once you start hitting this schedule, it does mess with you. So I'd say that about him. So that, and obviously, they had some turmoil that they experienced in year one and really fitting the parts and pieces together. Obviously, there was turmoil inside the locker room on a wide variety. We know Kevin Love is not a great teammate. I can attest to that following him here. Also, the fun fact that always is to me, this really proves it, that when his senior year in high school, he wasn't voted All-State. So that tells you how much of a dick the guy was. Because clearly, he was one of the top, if not, you could make an argument that he was the top player coming out of high school that year. So that tells you a lot if your own state's not making you an All-Star. Like, hello, he's easily that. He's like a top five player in the whole country, and he can't even get on that list. That tells you a whole lot. And obviously here, to me, you know, I was always preaching empty points, empty buckets. To me, that's at times when he's dependent to be a number one guy, it's different now. But when he had to be number one, he had a lot of empty buckets. But he put up so many numbers that you heard the argument he's a top five player. I mean, it was out there. You had PA saying he's better than Larry Bird, like all this crap, you know? Meanwhile, we didn't even get to 500 with him, you know what I mean? So, but obviously
I'll tell you this.
Problem. Go ahead.
One minor thing. Every friend I knew, and I don't know if you and I had this debate, but at least seven or eight of my sport friends that said I was
better than KG. Better than KG.
No.
Oh, okay. Because that argument was there too. Oh, he's better than KG.
Oh,
is he? Okay.
No, I was called a moron because I said there's no way in hell we trade Klay Thompson for Kevin Love, because that was a big deal. Everyone said you're an idiot. I said no, we keep Klay. Well, imagine Kevin Love and Steph Curry doing pick and rolls together. I said no, but everyone I knew said you make that trade 100%. I said you don't do it. Now, I've loved Klay, and I even watched him play in college, so I'm a little obviously heavy-hearted towards him. And I didn't predict he'd be this great of a shooter, but I knew he had something. But everyone said, trade Love for Klay. No.
That's the numbers.
I'm happy they didn't do that.
Those bloated numbers. That's why.
He's healthy again this year too, Chris, and he had a fluke injury last year, but I wouldn't say Love is injury prone. He just had a nasty shoulder nick up last year in the first round.
He's a tish injury prone, but not major injury. That he's not like, I know what you're saying, but the whole point is even when they started clicking last year, some of those four quarters he wasn't playing. You know, some of those fourth quarters he wasn't even playing. And I think that kind of humbled him, like, no, wait a second. The proof is in the pudding, and I'm seeing my ass not in the fourth quarter, but I'm also seeing W's here. So you could kind of see them gel late last year at the end of the year. It was like, wow, okay, they finally got it together. I felt like they took a lot longer to gel this year, clearly, and they always had that. And this is something to look for in the series game by game, that streak of inconsistency where, man, one night you're looking and you go, wow, dude, this is a championship-level team here. And then the next night you go, huh, geez, it's a different team. It's like they just, we're on the clock, we're salary. Who cares? You know what I mean? We have no commission. I don't care. You know what I mean? It just seemed weird, you know? And obviously, the coach. And I still believe this rumor to the day that I die, and it's never going to get, well, in a book or something, the LeBron autobiography, you know, I'm sure it could come out at some point. Maybe even Love would be honest about it. I do think he went to the coach went to the higher-ups, because Love was clearly on the block. I mean, he was on the block all year, trading block, and where he should have been on the block, you know, down low maybe a little more, but he was on the other block. And, you know, Blatt said, hey, it's either me or him. Period. I can't do it with this guy, whatever. So they've obviously had a lot of outside the basketball court, inside the locker room stuff, and it took them a while to gel. Now, the positive out of this is, well, it sounds like they've gotten a lot of stuff on the table, out there and on the table, like, hey, here's the deal. This is how we all feel about each other, fuckers. You know what I mean? So there is you can get over the hump, which most teams can't, but this team did. They did get over the hump. If it wasn't for LeBron, Mr. Do-It-All, I don't think this team would be the same, obviously, but because he does – it helps when a guy, your star, passes the ball. And to me, I love the moves that they made, the subtle ones. And obviously, Channing Frye comes to mind. The guys, if Love's, you know, not performing up to level, well, you have someone you can put in, and he can play pretty much similar to him, in a sense anyway. They're just deeper.
Just as good of a three-point shooter.
Yeah, definitely. I would give Love – here's the thing about Love. It's really frustrating because defensively, I'll give him credit here as far as his hustle. I never liked his hustle. To me, he just didn't hustle. The guy got so many buckets off frickin' cherry-picking, too, by sitting there complaining about something, not running the court, and just so happenly, because they had to go to the rack because it was 4-on-5, you know, it just happens that they missed a shot and Love's all the way down there, all wide open, and get an easy bucket. But I will say this.
Yeah.
I have seen, and this is kind of the LeBron effect and also the importance of, hey, dude, you're in the frickin' playoffs, man. You know what I mean? And that's something he hasn't been in much. He had a couple of games. That's it. He actually had – he's only lost once. He hasn't lost in America in the playoffs. that's his stat line. He's never lost when it comes to America in the playoffs. Now, that's a limited – you know, it's a very limited window there. But it's kind of funny. That's him. But I have seen him on the ground hustling. I've seen him deflect or block a shot. And the one thing I'll never say about him is fundamentally getting in position, Marshall, to get a rebound, the guy knows exactly what he's doing. If you're bigger or if you're smaller than him, that's one thing that I'll give him there. And we always, you know, we always hear a rebound is defense. Well, I always say it's secondary defense, because it's a matter of what you do before the shot goes up is the most important part. But yes, it is defense, because you are stopping. It's called a defensive rebound, and you are fighting for position, and you are doing that, yada, yada, yada. But to me, he can do things in the post, whether it's offensively or not defensively, but rebounding. He can, and I've seen him improve a little bit more. And this year, they're much deeper. I mean, you could name, in my opinion, like 11 players that could give you something. You know, if you look at James, Irving, Love, J.R. Smith, Frye, a guy like Richard Jefferson, he'll give you something. Thompson, of course, I missed him in the starting lineup. But Dellavedova off the bench, to me, gets to do everything he could do, but just in that 20 or 17 minutes, instead of stretching his minutes out, and as we see, Marshall, you know, chasing around Curry the whole time without a backup point guard, which they didn't have to play last year, even a Mo Williams would have been suitable last year in the playoffs just to give him a breather. He started wearing down, and all of a sudden, Marshall, he wasn't as effective, especially offensively. And then you got, you know, Amoskov, who we may see a Amoskov sighting, a Mo Williams sighting, and a Shumpert also comes off the bench. So they have – I like the pieces that they tweaked. The Moskov thing kind of throws me off, but then again – Love and Thompson down low, I get that. I do understand that. But like I said, we may see Moskov, but it also, you know, if Golden State brings, you know, if they start that lineup they did in Game 7, because Bogut was still in the game, right, in Game 7? Last night. They didn't go small. They just maneuvered Barnes and him. Was that it?
They use their so-called like death lineup like later in the game for a little bit, but
the
whole first quarter. Yeah,
right. They just maneuvered Barnes and him. Okay, so
exactly, yeah.
You saw Moskov really be a productive player in those first three games. Once they went small, that production fell off, and I think maybe that's the reason why, in general, he's not getting as much playing time as he did last year, because they do have some depth. They obviously have Love as well, which takes a center power forward position. And I just think they're a lot more talented from the outside. And I think the proof is in the pudding to where they know how to get two-pointers. They got that pretty much, I'm not going to say down, because no team has it down, because, you know, from game to game, sometimes – you know, you'll shoot 40% no matter if they're twos or threes, but obviously 40% from three is different, but they're just a lot deeper. And when LeBron crashes the defense, or the defenses crash on him, and he can look for that open guy, I think that they got a much better shot to hit a three-pointer with Irving and Love and Fry. And those three pieces last year, now Irving played pretty much all that first game. He got hurt in the first game. So you basically count the first game almost. I mean, he basically played in it all the way. He got hurt late in that game. But
yeah,
without Irving, without Love, and no Fry on the outside, even if some of these guys, like a Fry, just comes in and gives you 18, 20 minutes, even a guy last year, like I mentioned, Mo Williams and Dellavedova, if you could combo those guys, that would have been better, instead of just having him and like, here, LeBron, you got to do this. Sorry again, you know. So, and it also makes LeBron much fresher, and he doesn't have to freaking always get triple team and take a – because he was taking the most bad shots I've ever seen, but I understood he was doing it because Shumpert and Smith couldn't hit a freaking barn side of a barn. It was just horrible. And so he's like, ah, fuck it, I'm covered, but hey, I got to put something up, because the Iguodala is key. Iguodala's key because of his build, especially on LeBron, but that help defense is so key too, and that's what it was. And that's why you saw these guys wide open, but they couldn't hit the freaking shot. So I think they're a lot better offensively. Now, with Kevin Love, we're going to find – I think, just to start getting into predicting this thing and basing it off this year, last year, all that, I really think – and I don't want to put it down to one player or this or that, because we know that that's not how it goes a lot of times. But I really think Kevin Love and Draymond Green is going to be very interesting to watch that matchup. Because Love is going to be able to carry him outside, but he's okay outside because they still have some bigs down low. Now, that lineup, truth be told, didn't work against, you know, not well, not like it had all year. It didn't really work that well. They did dig a hole, and I'll give credit to Kerr, and I've said it several times.
Are we talking the Draymond Green, the death lineup for Golden State versus OKC? Is that what
you're
referring to?
No, last year they had to take Bogut out of the starting lineup to win that series,
yeah,
in my mind.
Yeah. Oh, okay, okay.
I don't think that, again, when you – what Trish Thompson was able to do, And what Moskov was able to do, it just wasn't pretty. I think it was a lot dirtier than, considering they only had one really full-on score that you look and go, that's a score right there. Obviously, we're talking LeBron. Considering that,
yeah.
I think they had him. I think they were beating them up worse than what I saw with Oklahoma City. And I say that only because they couldn't get up by those large margins because they didn't have a second score. Had they had a second score just in that time in those lineups, and I'm speaking to those lineups. I'm not speaking because, and this is why I wanted to give Kerr. I've given Kerr a couple of times on this point, and I want to reiterate it. That's a very dangerous thing to do, is switch a lineup. But he knew it wasn't going to work. And that's a realist right there. He looked at his players and said, listen, guys, we're a team. I'm not verbatim quoting him, of course.
Sure.
But he looked at him and said, hey, we got to be all – obviously, you got to be on all the same page when you switch a lineup when you're in the NBA Finals. You've had a great season. You have to be on the same page. All of you do. And they are. Clearly, they are. And it's awesome to watch teams like that. And this is why it's such a fun team to get behind and root for or just watch whatever your rooting interest is. I give him so much credit because the risk you're taking with – the confidence level of your team. It is a risk. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how the series ended up. And they say, oh, wasn't that big of a risk? Bullshit. That's a risk, dude. You went 68 games, 67 games last year? They won a lot of games.
Yeah,
and,
68, I think.
And they were hitting on all cylinders at that time. So, to me, I really like that. And it's awesome that they have that. You know, they proved that they could become better defensively over the years they have through the players that improved that they have and also through an Iguodala that you brought in and stuff like that. They proved that they're now a defensive team. Last night was a great example of that if you look at the point total. But I love how they can go small. I just think that Cleveland is better equipped to go small with them this year than they were previously, and that really falls around Fry, Irving, and Love. But to me, I think the Love Draymond Green matchup, even if it's not head to head the whole time or anything like that, I think that is so crucial because Love has to prove I'm a double double guy almost every night in these games. And also, some of the things we heard about in game four, Marshall. When he had tweaked his knee a little bit, but he was okay. He was good to go to get back in the game. And Lou said, he had been on the bench for a while. And don't get me wrong, I think that is a reason. Sometimes when you're on the bench, some guys get foul problems, right? And they're just not in the zone. And that game is intense, and it's a tight game. So I do understand, but how much confidence do you got in the guy? If you can't put him in the damn game when he had like 6 points and five boards in the third, he was playing good. You know what I mean? So it wasn't a confidence thing. At least it didn't appear to on the court, you know, because he had gotten out of that funk that went through. But also, Marshall, knowing him mentally on a court, like to me, when you got to have pep talks for a couple bad shooting games in the playoffs, that's a yellow flag for me. That's a big yellow flag. And it was like an accomplishment to come out of that funk as if you had had a whole series of bad games. And then in game seven, you got out of your funk. Dude, it was only like two or three bad games, and one of them was okay, you know. But I really think if Cleveland has any chance to get this thing done, Love is going to have to live up to the billing he got a couple years ago. And when a lot of people were trying to – I'll never call him a top five or top 10. I don't call him a top 20 player. I never have, never did, never will unless he changes all the way around.
Sure.
I really think the way Draymond Green was able to get over some adversity because – I don't know. I mean, it's just interesting to me. I think that's an interesting matchup right there. I think Love position-wise – is very good at getting position on a rebound. But once you start getting in his head like Draymond can, I just wonder. And I think it's such a key key thing for them, because I think LeBron's going to be LeBron. We know what he brings. Irving is not going to lead his team in assists, but he'll probably lead the team. He may even lead the team in scoring, because he has at times in the postseason, but he's going to shoot. He's going to shoot more than LeBron, probably. But that's what I think. That's what I really think a good chunk of this series, based off what I'm seeing now and what I saw last year as well in 2015.
I'm gonna completely counter you, Chris. And I've been thinking about this. I'm not doing this just like to script an argument. I also think that here we go again. We don't want to wake up any neighbors, but I also think that obviously they could have used a shooter last year to help, 100%, not denying that.
Could
have? But I think that
could have used one?
You see, even how you say that.
Listen to how you say that. Well, I mean, they could have used one. It would have maybe came in hand. Come on now.
They needed a three-point shooter
out of all that. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to cut you off, but listen to how you say it, dude.
Oh, okay. So they needed help, but I'm saying I believe the defensive mentality of Cleveland that they had to portray last year would actually give them a better chance than the team they're going to have this year. I think because and I'm quoting like Zach Lowe, the NBA guy I love, but this is also common knowledge. And people said you can't hide Kevin Love and you can't hide Kyrie Irving on the court when you're playing the Warriors, and they're going to put them in pick and rolls, and there's going to be massive defensive issues. Last year, now, again, they needed help shooting, 100%, but they had a defensive-based lineup. Now, you're right, they're going to score. There's going to be a whole bunch of different issues for Golden State to have to handle on the defensive end. Props well-deserved. I mean, J.R. Smith, Kyrie, you got people that can shoot, but I don't know how long they'll be able to play consistently with Kyrie and Love on the court.
Would you put those two on the bench then and start Dellavedova and Shumpert?
I'm not saying you bench them both. I'm just
saying that's what you said, that you would go with the defensive line. Who would you take out? Love then? You take out Love?
I would sit Love and I would stagger their time. I think you're going to get your butt kicked defensively if you have those two on the court together for a sustained amount of time. Because Golden State, they'll find whoever they need to find. They'll do a pick and roll with Clay or Steph, and you're going to be seeing threes drop like nuts because those guys, remember that stat I told you? I know it's it's a minor stat, but the pick and roll defense that Kevin Love and Kyrie did together in the playoffs is worse than any two teammate tandem in the NBA of all the regular season. You can't hide that against
playoffs,
the offense.
And then you set a regular season stack. Can you clear that up?
So the pick and roll defense. So like points per.
We're talking about the regular season, or are we talking about the playoffs? Because you comboed it.
Well, what I'm trying to say is the points allowed when Kyrie and Kevin Love defend a pick and roll for their playoff sample size is worse than any teammate combination in the regular season, a.k.a. it's awful. I think that's a huge red flag. I think you made great points of where their offense is going to be a whole different beast. But if Golden State, they know how to find pick and rolls. Clay and Steph are out there, and Kyrie's got to guard one of them. I think they're just going to expose the heck out of them, and that's going to put Tyronn Lue in a very unique situation. I'm with you, Chris. I don't think you bench bolt. That'd be nuts. But I think you got to be extremely careful if you want to play both, because if you want to start trading hoops with Golden State, you're not winning this series. Now, my point might be a little over-exaggerating, but I just think defensively, that's a big problem. So that I guess we'll see what happens.
When you say the opposite, you're saying it's going to be a shorter series than it was last year then, because that's not – You're not claiming something opposite. We were talking about offense, Marshall. We weren't talking about defense. I haven't even talked about defense yet.
Well, that's where I'm switching to now. But I do think that the Warriors. If you stick your guns and bring out Kevin Love and Kyrie, I think we'll have bigger win margins than we had last year. I just think that defense will get torched, and I think Tyrone Lue is going to have to come up with a creative way and maybe stagger minutes. But I think if you put Kyrie and Kevin Love out for a sustained amount of games,